29:45. Let's go.
Welcome, welcome to 29:45. All the time you need to get up to speed on what's making news in the Queen City. Ladies and gentlemen, this is our last show of 29:45. It's also our last semester of university, of journalism school. After this show, we're done. We're adults, more or less. But what does the future hold? But more than our futures as journalists, what's the future of journalism itself? What lies ahead for radio and local television in Saskatchewan?
Without having SEN's commitment, it's going to be really hard to get projects launched in Saskatchewan that will employ Saskatchewan taxpayers.
I think radio has the ability to have more direct impact more quickly still after, 100 years than really any other media.
We have a great opportunity to, focus on our community, which is really why we're here and what we're about.
I'm your host, Curtis Doring, and this is 29:45. While the commercial film and television industry struggles to survive in Saskatchewan, a huge blow was dealt to the independent producers of the province. On March 24th, the provincial budget announced that the Saskatchewan Communications Network, or SCN, would cease to exist, effective April 30th. Does local television have a future in Saskatchewan? Or will it fade to black with the loss of provincial funding? Kim Nakreko joined a group rallying to support SCN and brings us this story.
A gathering of hundreds of people outside the Saskatchewan Communications Network in Regina on the final day of March. It seems a reunion of sorts, or funeral, depending on your perspective. This is the film and television community in Saskatchewan. For the past year, their industry has taken a big hit. Caitlin Burnett is in her final year of the film and video production program at the University of Regina. She moved to Saskatchewan from Alberta 4 years ago because of the booming film industry. Now she's about to graduate and has no idea where to go from here.
SCN really matters to students because it offers a great starting point for us to get funding. Now that it's been pulled away, a lot of other funding in the province has to reassess, and usually you have to have a broadcaster on board. So SCN, great starting point. But now with that, what do we do? We have to reassess and just, I don't know what. Really getting me.
Mark Wehack is a Saskatchewan-based filmmaker, SCN viewer, and professor of Media and Production Studies at the University of Regina. He says the closure of SCN will have far-reaching and long-term effects.
SCN was really good at being the first broadcaster into a project, which allows other broadcasters in Toronto and elsewhere to commit to a project. And so without having SCN's commitment, it's going to be really hard to get projects launched in Saskatchewan that will employ Saskatchewan taxpayers. And it will also mean that any producer in Saskatchewan who wants to try and get a production launched has to go to Toronto. So the costs go up. We're much more marginalized there. Having a broadcaster like SCN in the province made it possible for the Saskatchewan film and TV industry to thrive.
The closure of SCN will save the government $2.4 million this year and $5 million next year. Those numbers don't add up to many of the people here today. Ian Taves is an award-winning filmmaker whose television series Landscape is Muse has experienced international success. SCN was a big part of that. He says that the decision to shut down SCN is actually a money-losing venture.
Most of my argument and discussion here has been around the numerical elements of our business. Every SCN dollar that we get pretty well immediately generates about four times that in national funding that comes back to our company and to our people.
Looking around the crowd, it's clear that more than 35 SCN employees are going to be affected by the closure. Many independent producers, directors, writers, and crew are all questioning if they can stay in a province with no broadcaster to support their Indigenous storytelling. Today, people gather to say goodbye to friends, to a broadcaster, and possibly to a way of life.
SCN!
Kim Nakreko, 29:45.
Where do you get your news?
I read the Globe and Mail every morning.
The internet, usually.
I prefer having, you know, the paper and ink there, just because, I mean, it forces me to go and read through the entire thing. You know, it's all there present, so I'm more likely to go and expand what I know rather than just staying in narrow fields.
Cell phones. You might look to your cell phone to give you, like, mobile updates on that particular story.
Yeah, like Google News or BBC.com and stuff like that.
I like to use Dig because it pools popular news stories together.
ABC News emails it to my email account. And Molly Thomas on the CTV.
So I'm pretty weak because I don't even read the news at all. I have no idea what's going on. I get my news from my girlfriend because she tells me what's happening.
In 1979, the Buggles predicted that video would kill the radio star. Well, 30 years later, radio is still on the air. But what does the future hold for fans of the AM/FM dial? 2945's Eric Anderson finds out.
Walk into any family's living room and you'll notice the furniture surrounds one item, the television. It provides hours of entertainment and information for the household. But it wasn't always this way. Before TV, families would gather around the radio, turn the dial to their favorite station, and listen as their imaginations took over.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The shadow knows.
Jill Spellacy grew up in this era, her favorite program being The Shadow. She is now the regional director for CBC Saskatchewan. For her, radio was a gateway to another place.
It was the storytelling, but it was more, I just got completely kind of captured in my mind in terms of the power of sound and how you don't need to see a thing. You can just use your ears and it takes you immediately to a place, and it's a physical sort of movement.
In urban centers like Regina, radio keeps up with the daily grind of city life. But its impact differs in Canada's north. There, it plays a more traditional role, reaching out to dispersed communities and keeping them connected. Spellacy knows this firsthand.
I loved being in the north because there was still that kind of sense of the fundamental role that radio plays, that, you know, it's still that sense that it connects remote places and it joins people together that are living way far away from one another, and there aren't a lot of huge communities. There are a lot of small communities, and so it was a real reaching out mechanism that harkens back to the early days of radio for those of us who lived in the south. But in large parts of northern Canada, it's still performing that role.
Radio, your constant companion. Radio, your traveling friend.
Radio has played a vital role in connecting people to their communities for decades. But television and the internet are bringing people together in new and creative ways. How can radio compete, especially when it comes to news? Murray Wood is the provincial news director for Ralco Radio.
I think radio has the ability to have more direct impact more quickly still after, 100 years than really any other media. And, I can point to a number of examples, but most specifically when something's happening right now and it's local, well, the national news networks can't bring it to you in the same fashion. They just can't. Local TV can't report in the same moment-to-moment fashion. They just can't. They don't have the ability to turn their ship around of what they're doing that quickly. They can't go to air as quickly as we can, because really all we really need is a cell phone.
The internet was supposed to pull people away from their radios. And in many cases, it has. But stations are now online and can connect with them there. Keith Calhoun, general manager of CJTR, says the internet is a great way for radio to interact with the community, however big that community may be.
It's a great tool for radio stations like ours. I mean, we have a great opportunity to, focus on our community, which is really why we're here and what we're about. But we get a lot of listeners worldwide tuning into our programs, a lot of expat, Regina types, and other people that discover us because they've got a certain interest in a particular program. I'll use our Scottish program, Scotland Calling, for example. The host of that program has managed to, create an audience base from Ontario, Scotland, and elsewhere in the world that tune in and regularly correspond with him and with the station, too.
So what's in the future for radio? While staying true to its roots, it continues to evolve, now in the form of satellite radio, podcasting, and iPods. Radio has gone viral, but it's still the place to go to find out what's happening, here and now.
But people are always going to want that connection with their community. They're always going to, you know, be interested in what their friends and neighbors are up to or what's going on. And, you know, if you look at commercial radio, Regina is a bit of an exception, but in most markets in Canada, in big markets, the number one rated stations are news talk outlets. And that's because people want to know what's going on, you know, within a 2-hour drive of, you know, in their communities and that sort of thing. And that's partly, you know, that's a big part of what we offer.
Radio may have changed since the days of the shadow, but its future looks bright indeed. Eric Anderson, 2945.
Technology changes so fast that most people don't bother keeping up. Every day, someone wants something done faster than before, but it's definitely not done better. Maybe we should go back to a period where the news was about the story and not the headline. Kent Morrison steps onto a soapbox.
Is anyone out there listening? I'm here to announce a death. Yes, I'm here to tell you that the modern journalist has died. I'm not just talking about the government's recent hit on Saskatchewan's only independent film network. No, I'm talking about journalism as a whole. Now, investigations are still ongoing, but there seems to be two popular theories on the cause of death. First, there's the thought that journalism died of natural causes. Unable to keep up with the ever-growing need for speed in the newsroom, these media relics have gone the way of the dinosaur, replaced by lightning-quick web staffers who don't care about the story or even if it's right, just as long as they publish it on their website first. Natural evolution, some may say. The times, they are a-changin'. But on the contrary, my friends, journalism hasn't died. It was murdered. Who's the culprit? Well, in fact, it was a conspiracy. A conspiracy between the two things journalists care about most. The listener and the media corporations that sign the checks. Both had the means and the motive. Think about it. Every listener out there wants their news now. Right now. Skip the details, just give them the facts. They can't be bothered to listen to the whole story anyway. Of course, this is the perfect partner for the mass media corporations. With a lack of demand for real hard-hitting news, it's a green light to hack and slash the newsroom. Those that are left are stretched so thin and paid so little, they can't get beyond the daily news grind and even think about filing something substantial. This is the last show for 2945, and I hope you enjoyed our commitment to bringing you stories that matter. We certainly enjoy telling them, because we're journalists, and that's what we do. Well, that's what we used to do. I'm Kent Morrison, and I'm stepping off my soapbox.
What about television and radio? Where do you see that in 10 years from now?
I don't know. Maybe I'll get a new girlfriend and she'll tell me more news, maybe. That's about all I can say. So,
radio, I still see kind of not really moving that much because a lot of people do listen to the news while they're driving.
It's not like you can sit down and open your computer or even watch your television while you're driving.
Television, I'm going to guess, is going to be over the internet. Radio is probably going to be moved to the podcast, I'm going to guess.
It's not unusual to see or hear the community on the news. As journalists, we ask random people their opinions on things they might not have a clue about. If the future of radio depends on the internet, what does the future of this news phenomenon depend on? Crack team Molly Thomas and Kayla Lavoie hit the streets to find out what people think about streeters.
So what do you think of news stories on the news where people ask random people questions on just an unrelated topic?
Kind of like this?
Kind of, yes.
You know,
sometimes I think they're getting harassed.
Why do you think they're getting harassed?
being forced to answer some questions that maybe they don't want to.
Do you think that it's important to the news to get random people's perspectives, or do you think that people just don't know what they're talking about?
I like it because then you find out what other people think too, and either validate what you think or maybe present a new opinion you didn't see.
I don't really care. People probably just make stuff up as they go, though.
Do you think journalists sometimes are a little bit too nosy and kind of, you know, shove mics into people's faces and come up really close to them and walk with them?
No, that's not a big deal. Like, that's what journalism is about, right? You have to ask questions. You have to find your answers. So we are the people have the answers, so I guess you have to ask them.
And do you think it's important to regular news stories just to have a random person's opinion in it?
No, because they probably have no vested interest.
Do you think it's awkward that I'm asking you these questions right now on this story?
Do you? I'm comfortable. I don't know.
Are you creeped out right now?
No, I feel pretty close to you.
Excellent.
Do you think I'm creepy right now for being this close to you and asking you questions?
Actually, I did just know how close we are. No, I think we're good. You seem nice.
And what country are you from? Where are you from?
I'm from China.
Okay, and in China, do people come up to the street and ask you random questions too? Is that very normal on the news, or is it different than here?
It's normal to ask these questions in the street.
More people do it than here?
I mean, I will not say more, but I think maybe similar.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch. I'm just not one that likes to be the center of attention.
Maybe you don't love Regina, but it's still home to the Rough Riders, Pat Fiacco's Upper Lip, and the sky of infinite horizons. Let's talk about that vista. Is it really infinite? Is a better Regina just around the corner, or way off beyond the horizon? 2945 Sarah Fitzgerald finds out.
With a lackluster downtown core and lots of construction on the city's edges, this has many Queen City residents asking, what's next for Regina? As the economy the world round has tumbled down, Regina's has been moving steadily upward. During the past few years, we've seen an expansion in infrastructure, and with over 1,700 available jobs, there's no shortage in employment. But for Regina to continue to thrive, it has to attract people from around the globe. Enter the city's rebranding campaign. Infinite Horizons. Larry Hiles is the president and CEO of the agency spearheading the new campaign, the Regina Regional Opportunities Commission. He says the new brand is important for the city.
Yeah, it's helping us envision a positive future and then help us stay on path to get there.
But what exactly does a positive future entail? Hiles says part of the package will be a new downtown core.
New development in the downtown that will be exciting for folks, both from a cultural and a business perspective, and really trying to enhance the number of people living in our downtown core.
However, this leaves some wondering if a vibrant downtown core is so necessary, why has the city been paying so much attention to building up new suburbs like Harbor Landing? Rob Daglau is a community coordinator in Regina's North Central. He says one of the problems with these new suburbs is they're not for everyone.
I find about these new developments is we still forget that there are single people out there. There are people that really can't afford neighborhoods like that. And so when you talk about really having sustainable communities where everybody is inclusive, we're still gentrifying these neighborhoods. There's only a certain demographic that can afford to move into those neighborhoods.
Bob Bjorki is the director of the city's planning and sustainability. He says the new downtown plan for Regina is going to create a completely different atmosphere for the city's core.
The name of the plan's changed, so it's the Regina Downtown Neighborhood Plan, so it's like some of the other neighborhood plans we have. And that's absolutely the intent, to sort of have a mix of uses, so it isn't just a 9-to-5 place to work and shop. It also has, whether it's restaurants, different entertainment, as well as residences. So people will be here, you know, 24/7.
And although the downtown plan will take years to fully implement, residents can expect to see changes a few months from now when construction begins on the expansion of Victoria Park. Sarah Fitzgerald, 2945.
And now the Lister. Joining us is Sean LaRoss Stettner to tell us who is up or down in the past few weeks.
Thanks, big guy. First off, thumbs up to the students at the Live-In at First Nations U. Way to stand up for what you think is right. I'm right there with you. And thumbs down to the federal government for not fully reinstating the funding. It's going to be distributed through the U of R, for the most part a proven financially sound institution. So what's the harm in a second chance now? Speaking of second chances, thumbs down to the National Parole Board. It's only recently been brought to light that Graham James was pardoned, 3 years ago. And since then, it's been rumored that he's coached another minor league team in Spain. A, why are we just finding out about this now? And B, how did the parole board think that this was in any shape or form a good idea? Next, thumbs down to the latest fix for Apple junkies, the iPad. Besides sounding like Apple's foray into the feminine hygiene market, this monstrosity is completely ridiculous. It doesn't do anything an iPod Touch can't, and it can only run one application at a time. Hello, Steve Jobs. You ever heard of multitasking? I think I know what happened here. Shaq asked Apple to make him a custom iPod, and instead of only making a few for Shaq, they decided to mass market it as a tablet. And lastly, a huge thumbs up to the staff here at 2945. We've come a long way since our first show 2 months ago. Judge for yourself and go check out our past shows online at www.wix.com/2945/2945. I'm Sean LaRoss Stettner, and that's my list.
This, the sixth episode of 2945, marks the end of our little journalism school experiment. So to commemorate this historic occasion, we would like to give you, our loyal listeners, a little taste of what goes on behind the scenes. Consider it a gift from me to you.
I'm about to whip somebody's ass. Oh, I'm about to whip somebody's ass.
All right. Show 5 was great. Show 6 is going to be better. Give me a radio on 3. 1, 2, 3. Radio!
Now, this whole class has been a little bit of an experiment, right? Yes. How do you think the experiment went?
I'm thrilled with it. The fact that we pick a top story and then find a relevant theme from it, that the students, the people involved in the show, have a real dedication to what they do.
I'm about to whip somebody's ass.
All right, so you're one of the producers.
Yes.
Do you take sole credit for the success of the show?
No, I do not. I know Karen does, but I view this as a team effort.
Who's our best reporter?
Me. That was Kayla, by the way.
Money Mike. I still remember his coyote pack with all the sound effects of people shooting coyotes.
If you had to pick out one story that just really stood out to you, what would it be?
Well, I would avoid this question.
Now, you're a writer.
I try.
You good at it?
I try.
Do you think you're the boring host?
Thanks for planting the seed that boredom was the word, but I would prefer to be known as the depressing host.
Do your best impression of me.
So, like, I'm going to ask you a question, and I just want to know what you really think. Okay?
Awesome.
Least favorite part, I guess having a lot of clips when you're in the edit suite and not knowing where they should all go, and having, like, you know, an hour's worth of clips to cut up.
Oh, the delete everything button you gotta watch out for, because, you press that and it's game over. You're starting from scratch if you haven't saved it.
Why should you listen to me? I don't know. I think I have good things to say. But that's the good part about radio. If you don't like me, just turn me off.
I think the most surprising thing about this whole thing was that other people actually listened to our show, too.
I don't have a least favorite part. I love this class. I think it's awesome. I think we get to come together and make a product and be proud of it and put it on air, so I'm happy.
The most awesome radio show ever produced by an advanced broadcast class in the history of time.
I will genuinely miss this show a lot, and I will miss the process, and I'll miss... We've had great profs to help us out, and it's a lot of fun doing this, and I will be sad when it's over.
This is the last week. We've kicked ass so far. Let's make sure we go out kicking ass. Let's just go out with love in our hearts. Give me love on 3.
One, two, three, love!
And that's all the time we have. 2945 is Eric Butters Anderson, Karen Mrs. Mansbridge Yeski, Money Mike Raptus, Carolyn I Love Regina Lavoie, Sean LaRoss Stetner, also known as DJ Insurance, Le Petit René Lalonde, Kim Groovy Mama DeCraco, Kayla the Twizzler Lavoie, Kent Mustache Machine Morrison, Molly 10-Year Plan Thomas, Sarah Call Me Princess Fitzgerald, and I'm Curtis Deep Delivery Doring. Special thanks to Gennady the Mad Russian Chernoff and Robin Grandpa Lawless. This has been a production of the University of Regina's School of Journalism in collaboration with 91.3 FM, CJTR Regina Community Radio.